the Fortress of Comic News, episode 210. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside my co-host, the magnificent Mike.
Hello, welcome. Great interview we have today with Mr. David Hazan. And yes, he is the writer of Mad Cave Studios Nottingham, the book that is getting a third printing, as we found out. So check that out. He woke up very early in Australia to do that interview with us. So it would be a disservice to the man to not sit there and listen to it. He's a very cool dude. So stick around for that today.
Awesome book, by the way. Awesome.
Oh, yeah. Really good stuff. Yeah. It's probably one of the coolest. I mean, since Robin Hood Men in Tights, it's the coolest twist on the Robin Hood story. It's hard to top that, you know.
How did we not talk Robin Hood Men in Tights with him?
I don't know.
We failed as interviewers.
I mean, we didn't talk about him. Sometimes you just don't go there. But, you know, oh, God, I love that movie. Now I want to watch it. So
I got to think, this is terrible for audio listeners, but, you know, we got a YouTube. Check it out.
Right.
I got this poster that I'm going to frame tomorrow.
Okay.
Can you see it?
Yeah.
I don't know if people can see it or not, but yeah, so I now have, it's Jack Kirby.
Yep.
And it's got a bunch of his creations. We got Mr. Miracle, we got Darkseid thing. He's holding a cap shield. I love this poster. I'm going to put a link to the artist in the description.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
I got it through Redbubble, so the artist could probably get some more purchases, maybe.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like that. I might get one, too. Before we, I guess I'll save it for the movie news. David S. Sandberg being a troll on Reddit, is actually kind of hilarious, but, should we just jump into the news? We have such a cool interview today and not waste anybody. Do you have any stories for me or no? I mean, Mortal Kombat comes out in like 5 days. So
Mortal Kombat comes, I've been super busy. I did find time to watch that Tiger Woods documentary. Really good.
Oh,
If you got 3 hours to waste.
Nope.
Not really. I've somehow found 3 hours to waste. I don't know.
That's
how
awesome. I mean, yeah, sometimes you just, you know, got to sit down and watch those things.
I'll be all over the internet soon because I'm guesting on a bunch of stuff that's already recorded. But yeah, cool. Other than that, just busy week.
Yeah, I've been moving my comics around, you know, putting them in storage and stuff like that. And pulled out a bunch of the Invincible issues. And I'm like, I should probably finish this collection before these issues go way up in price. So I've been surfing eBay this weekend. And I'll tell you, it's hurting to see like issues that are like issue like 50s and 60s of Invincible go for like $20 a piece now. I'm just like, man, I used to complain about these costing like $5 to $6 a piece. You know, as much as I joke about being a speculator, I really messed this one up.
I was listening to somebody talk about this, though, recently, and they were saying how, like, there's got to be a tipping point for all this, because basically what they're doing was, I don't remember the guy's name, but he started a company where he's appraising collections and selling them for people.
Yep.
So the idea is, you know, Grandpa Mike passes away, he leaves his collections to Mike Jr. Mm-hmm. And Mike Jr. doesn't give a shit about comics, especially Invincible. Right. And right, so dude, he wants to get rid of them.
All right, relax. I'll tell you right now, I would not be willing that to that shitty grandson. Holy crap. He doesn't deserve them.
So he goes to this guy, he, you know, appraises them, sells them for him, and, you know, tries to make it easier on people. And he was talking about it. He goes, at a certain point, like, this has to plummet because there's no way it can keep going the way it is.
Right.
So that's my hope, is that eventually it just plummets.
Eventually you'll get a first appearance of Superman for like $50.
I don't think that one will, right, but he was talking like there's a issue of Wonder Woman where it's the first time that they explain that she can fly using air currents.
Mm-hmm.
And that shot from like a dollar bin comic to like a $200, $300 comic.
Oh, wow.
Because of Woman 84.
Right.
Like, it's like sooner or later, that shit has to stop. Like, people can't keep falling for this.
Right, right. And then you get the weird stuff of like, oh, the first pages of Invincible were from like a Masters of the Universe comic or something like that, and it's like, so that was his first appearance, blah blah. It's like, no.
First appearance Spawn was in the previews catalog.
Yeah, right. And it's like, take the comics and whatever. I'm just salty about it over here. But anyways, we'll jump into the news. This is a comic podcast to celebrate comics, not to, get salty about them. So as we do every episode, I think. So it doesn't take much, I love
Show the
comics.
passion.
Yep. HBO Max's original series Doom Patrol is adding some Z-list characters to its upcoming season. Oh boy, the Dead Boy detectives are premiering in the next season, and are being portrayed by Sebastian Croft and Ty Tennant. Yeah, I'm just saying the second season was even cr like this does not surprise me because the second season we got like Sex Patrol, in one of the episodes. And I mean, you didn't think it would work, but somehow they're making that like they're making the wackiness of Doom Patrol work, and it's pretty freaking awesome.
I keep saying I gotta jump back in Doom Patrol because when they announced Flex Mentallo, I should have been all over that
Oh
show,
yeah,
and I wasn't.
like the Flex
But
Mentallo episode with like Danny in the street was like the turning point for me. We're like, wow, they're really just going all out. And then there is an episode with the Sex Patrol where they're like, they have like a almost like a mystery machine. They go around like they're like the Ghostbusters of like sex demons or something, and it's hilarious.
so. I'm just gonna throw this out there, everybody. They're slowly making their way through Grant Morrison's run of Doom Patrol. What follows right after Grant Morrison's run for Doom Patrol?
Oh, we know it's Codpiece for sure.
So now I'm gonna go watch this show because we should all support it so they could do Codpiece.
I didn't even know if he's a Z-list character. He might not
That's an
even
A-list
fall.
character.
Yeah,
Like
A-list
how
character.
like
Right.
that's what makes the money at DC
If he's
right
not
there.
the season four villain, like what the hell do you have that show for?
That'd be awesome.
They're gonna be like, well, can we continue the show after the Grant Morrison run? They're like, I don't know. They flip through the pages and they hold it up like, oh, I think we have something.
How do we shut these two guys up on the internet? Just put it in the TV show. Just do it already.
Just stop. Anyways, time for some more Marvel Cinematic Universe mutant rumors. According to sources, Disney Plus is working on a Wolverine series to introduce the character and his mythos to the MCU. The series is said to be an anthology in which every season will be about a different part of Wolverine's history, starting with his time in the Weapon X program. So you're getting another origin story, Chris. Do we need that? Do we need like the season all about his Weapon X program, or
That's the only part of this I don't like.
yeah, like we don't need a whole season of that again. We've seen
Like,
it so many times.
I'm hoping that that part of the room, like, A, this is all rumors, so who knows? But I'm
Right.
hoping that part of the rumor is like they start off, like, maybe the first episode or two is about Weapon X. Like, I'd be more interested in this if it was like 6-hour-long episodes. And each episode is a different thing. So, like the first one, you do Weapon X because get it out of the way. And then the next one, like it's, Wolverine, World War II. And then, like, just go on throughout and, like, hit different historical notes with Wolverine involved. I would be more interested in that. If the whole season is Weapon X, I'm going to get halfway through this. I'll probably love it because, I mean, Disney Plus MCU has been awesome. But I do feel like halfway through Weapon X, I'll be like, okay, like just have him run through the hall with the thing on his head. We get it.
Give us the hallway scene, end it. And I mean it I don't find it interesting because more than likely with the Weapon X origin, we're not gonna see him interacting with other mutants, and that's like the fun part, right? Like, yeah, Wolverine's cool, but like he's gotta interact with some other mutants at some point.
That's the other thing. Like, if this is, hey, we're going to do a couple, let's say we do 3 X-Men movies a year, 2 X-Men movies a year. We do an X-Force, we do an X-Men. And then, like, this is another thing. So, like, Wolverine's in X-Force, and then he also has his own TV show. Like, that would be better, too, because then at least we get, like, sassy, back-talking Wolverine in the movie, and then we get cranky helmet head Wolverine in the TV show. It's a neat idea though.
I think I mean, yeah, the MCU hasn't done us wrong yet, so, and we'll talk about that in a second. After we talk about Invincible.
Did you catch the cameo?
The cameo. Well, okay, so I texted people about this today, this week, because there was an Ezra Miller cameo, and hold on, hold on. There is, I can't remember. There is Ezra
Roland.
Miller, right?
Yeah, Roland.
I don't know. Who was it?
Roland. Rick and
Roland.
Morty.
Oh yeah, Rick and Morty. Yeah, that's yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So that was the two. It was Justin Roiland, who plays Rick in Rick and Morty, and they had him playing a drunk college student. So it was like pretty much Rick.
Yeah, it fit.
Yeah, like he started shouting at the girls. You're like, holy shit, is that Rick for like? And then they come out with Ezra Miller as DA Sinclair, which is like I was texting people like, how do they keep affording all these big names on this show? It's insane. I couldn't believe it. Did we know about the Ezra Miller? I can't even remember. There's
I
been
think we
so many.
did, because I mean Sinclair's been throughout the show.
Right.
It doesn't sound like Ezra Miller. It's
Yeah.
weird. Because I went back, like I saw that too, and it clicked to me that Ezra Miller's playing Sinclair. I'm like, so I had just come to terms with Sinclair last episode, like kind of liking his voice actor, and then I saw it when I was watching on Prime. And I was like, it doesn't sound like Ezra Miller, though.
No, like there those are so I think you're getting are you getting it mixed up with so there's Cecil. Cecil is the
Oh, I'm mixing Cecil with Sinclair.
yeah, no,
Yeah.
DA Sinclair is the mad scientist that Cecil like that's why at the end of the episode they're like, oh yeah, we'll deal with him because he's even though he's crazy, he was pretty smart, right? Like I built these robots to go toe
Oh.
to toe. Yeah.
So ignore my stupidity, everybody.
Yeah.
I don't even think that sounded like Ezra Miller.
Oh, the DA Sinclair guy? Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird
Yeah.
too. So you know what happened was, as I paused it because I was like, "That's Rick from Rick and Morty," and I think when I paused it, Cecil showed up,
Yeah,
and I saw
right.
Ezra Miller, and so wires
Yeah.
got crossed.
Yeah, that's weird. They do that nice thing on Prime where it like shows who's speaking, but also it's delayed. So it's like never who's in the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have Walt Goggins does Cecil, and he's, I mean, that dude has been in so much stuff.
Yeah, so do you think that I feel like Kirkman just called people up and were like, "Hey, like you missed out on Walking Dead. Like y'all told me I was nuts,
Right,
and look
right.
what happened there. Come be a part of this Invincible thing, and this time
Yep.
you can be on the ground floor, and I'm gonna pay you peanuts, and we can do this really cool cartoon."
Yeah, baby
'Cause that's the only
peanuts.
thing that makes sense in my head.
And I mean, it could be a whole COVID thing too. It's really easy for these actors to like record things from home,
Yeah.
probably.
Well, that and maybe Bezos is just like, I have enough money. Let's make Kirkman's dream come true.
Yeah.
Who
Which
knows?
every episode is it's been amazing. You know, we get the robots. This is all stuff that happens in issue 7. So we're kind of it's kind of jumping around. Between, because like, or issue 8, because like 7 or 8 is when you know the first appearance of the Guardians of the globe, and so they're kind of like jumping around between issues. Because I remember that cover of issue 8, I think it is, where you see those robots on the cover of the issue. But man, what a, I mean, you get the whole like them going to college and his best friend realizing that he's invincible, can't say anything. And you get the whole like Cecil's like, yeah, this guy was crazy, but they're gonna use DA Sinclair to make those remember the zombie Invincibles or the like the evil Bolshevites to you know, well they think they're good to fight Invincible if they needed to. And then we have the whole B story with dude, the scene with Omni-Man drinking beer on the roof with the guy who makes the costumes, that was like oof, you know, is he gonna kill him or what? That was a pretty tense scene, I think.
that whole subplot is getting real tense because
Yeah.
then, you know, Mark's mom, who's like just a badass because she's just a regular chick and standing up to the most powerful being in what we think is the universe. And everything's starting to unravel for Omni-Man, and like people are figuring it out, and he knows it, but he doesn't want them to know that he knows it.
Right.
And he's interacting with them in these moments. It's getting real tense, but
yeah,
I love the, because they did the whole Mark's friend is in love with this dude from college, and then that dude turns into a killer robot thing.
Yep.
And I love the way that played out. I thought it was done really well. And I like, I don't remember Mark's relationship with the high school girlfriend being as intense as it is in the show.
Yeah, and it I mean, they're almost, after this episode, it's almost like it's kind of finished at this point.
Yeah, I think they're going to, I wonder, because it feels like they're going to flirt with this, does Mark give up his secret identity thing?
Yeah.
You know, so we can get a little strange. And,
yep.
I'm liking that. I like that whole dynamic there of, like, you know, it's, he's a high schooler and he thinks that this is the person who he's going to be with for the rest of his life. And spoiler alert, everybody, you're not.
Right. right.
And he's trying to play with those emotions and figure out what's right and what's, everybody's kind of giving him their advice, but, you know, it, once again, he's a teenager. He's not listening to any of them. So I'm loving everything going on with this show. I think it's hitting so many great, not only the Invincible vibes from the comics that I love, but just great life moments that we can all kind of connect with, which is what Invincible really was at the end of the day.
Right, right. And then the scary part of Omni-Man punching the wall because his wife has found out the truth about him. And then, the end with the whole, I can't think of the hero's name, but the kids digging up the dead body and the Mahler twins are there to clone him. So we're going to, so we are getting him coming back from the dead. So it seems. Yeah.
We didn't even get into like Robot, you know, and him and the Mahler twins and his moment there.
Yeah.
His relationship with Monster Girl and how that's progressing.
Yeah. There's a lot going on now. So we're in the thick of it. Love the show. It's hard for me to see where the season's going to end. I don't know how many episodes we're getting this season. I think it, or maybe we're getting 8 episodes. So, a couple more, a few more. So, I mean, either way, it's awesome.
Hopefully it keeps going, because I just, I'm really loving it.
Yep. And then another show that Chris is madly in love with this week was Falcon and Winter Soldier episode 5. One more episode to go. And man, what a tease to leave us on at the, I almost wish I skipped it and waited to watch the last two, you know?
Yeah. So
where do we even start? I mean, start off right off with the Walker bullshit of you can't be Captain America anymore. You killed someone.
Yeah. So like, you know, he gets the consequences there.
Right.
And it just echoes back to Captain America, the First Avenger.
Yep.
Where the scientist said, like, you know, it brings out the good in you, it also brings out the bad in you. And, you know, Walker's was trained to be, I think I said this last week, where Walker is exactly what the government would pick to be a super soldier.
Right.
And it's the wrong pick. Because Walker's a trained soldier who is, entire life has been war and death.
Yep.
And this isn't a critique on soldiers, you know, support the military and all, but that's not somebody who you would want in this fictitious world to have that serum floating through them, because all the issues that come with those things kind of bubble out. And that's kind of the point of US Agent.
Right.
So I loved all that. I love that Elaine Benes showed up. And came out of nowhere.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I could not see anyone besides Veep, because she, I mean, she's amazing at Veep, but I guess she's like, what's her character? A handler or something like that? Or
she leads a group of soldier or spies for S.H.I.E.L.D. in the comics, if I remember correctly. It's not Rambeau, that's the other.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that's who she, and allegedly she was supposed to show up in, or is supposed to show up in Black Widow.
Okay. Because her character was awesome and really badass.
Yeah, I, she's such a, like, BZ list character in Marvel. I'm trying to remember who she played, though.
I'm just, and, like, I almost remember that, like, purple streak in her hair, too. Like, cause she had, like, her hair dyed, I don't know. But either way, I mean, it was, like, a pleasant surprise, because, like, they show the heel walking down the hallway, the heel's walking down the hallway, and you're like, who the hell is this character? And it happens to be her, so.
Fontaine, that's who she is.
Who?
Valerie Fontaine. Yeah, oh, okay. So, who knows? I mean, she could be connected to Hydra, she could be connected to S.H.I.E.L.D., she could be connected to S.W.O.R.D., who fucking knows? But she's obviously government of some sort.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, we get the whole, the bromance between Falcon and Winter Soldier this episode of, like, rebuilding the boat together. That was awesome. I mean, the fight scene with them and getting the shield back was awesome.
Yeah.
And him ripping the wings off was crazy. Walker ripping the wings off was so crazy. And then I like the whole, like, handing Zemo over to Wakandans, and then they pretty much give Sam his new suit that we haven't seen yet, because they're like, oh, we put it on, and then roll credits. And then this episode has an after credits scene, which none of them have had before, but it's Walker building his own Captain America shield.
Yeah, which I can credit this joke to our friend Joe, but, you know, built his own shield with blackjack and hookers.
Yeah, pretty much.
So the sequence of them building the boat was good, but what I really loved was the sequence where they're just kind of bouncing the shield back and forth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's right before the, like, gotta have a montage scene.
Yeah, the montage. the training montage. Do some push-ups and you could be Captain America. Yeah.
But them just talking and being real with each other and, like, kind of getting past the quippiness and getting past some of the bullshit was just refreshing. I really liked that.
Yeah.
And I like that Bucky's the one that, like, tells the Wakandans, like, I have one more thing I need from you.
Right.
And obviously that's going to be Sam's Captain America suit. I don't think it could be anything else.
Right.
So everything there was great. And then, so Walker going back, building a new shield.
With his, like, Medal of Honor in it.
Yeah. So this is obviously him. This is his last stretch of, like, he's going to show up as Captain America and fight against Sam, Captain America.
Yep.
And then I think the season's going to end with him being in the black suit.
Yep. Because
he'll show up again somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It all fits. Like, Walker in the comics is a soldier who was given the serum, was told he was going to be Captain America, and he went too far, and so he went off on his own and said, okay, I'll just be U.S. agent. And I just am loving seeing this happen and exist.
And I guess the only thing I have an issue with is that shield isn't going to hold up to vibranium that he's making, right? It should just fall apart right away if it hits the vibranium shield. This is my only thought. Like,
you'd think,
right.
I don't know how they're going to explain that.
Yeah, that's the only comic book science, like, I'm holding them to, because they've been so, like, good about explaining vibranium throughout the... But that's just, you know, one little quip in all of it. So it was all great. I just want the less. I want to see the season finale.
I'm so ready. And because I want to see Sam in the suit.
Yeah.
And I want to see... Do they go full U.S. agent with Walker, or does he just show up in his cap suit again?
Right.
Because I think one way or another we get U.S. agent. I just don't know if it's going to be here and now.
Yeah. Well, let's hope. All right, movie news. Before we talk about Shazam, well, Yeah, Shazam added another actress to the upcoming sequel. Lucy Liu, pretty huge name, is going to be the villain Calypso, who is Apollo's daughter. So yeah, we're getting, Fury of the Gods. It really is. She's directly related to the gods themselves. A little more trolling from David F. Sandberg, the director of the Shazam movie. There's a subreddit called DC Entertainment Universe Leaks that I go on quite often to, like, people will share scripts and things that they and like set photos for movies that are filming and stuff. And someone posted a video of iPhone walking into the Shazam writing studio and then going to David Sandberg's office, opening the whole script to Shazam, flipping to the last page, and it gives a whole conversation between the Shazam family, and they're in this old Hall of Justice, and they're talking about there's a Batman cowl, there's all these symbols of the Justice League, and they're like, the real Justice League was us all along or some shit. It was some really awesome ending to the movie. I don't know if it's real or not, but it was the whole heart and family thing happening again. And the person who posted it was David himself. So number one, I mean, the dude trolls and watches the Entertainment Leaks subreddit. He's on there and he's commented and like clarified some things. So he loves that the fans are making theories and stuff like that. He posts a video of the biggest leak you can get is walking into the dude's office and sharing a video of the script. But you also know that a lot of stuff has been pulled down, and so you know that DC the legal team is actually trolling the or going through that subreddit as well. So it's like corporate DC and the writers and directors are aware that these things are happening, and it's like it was just funny that he trolled everybody and sent a video of the script. Everybody was like, wait, that's the director posting on here. So that was pretty awesome.
That's interesting.
I think he's just happy that people want to watch this movie. I don't know, he's just celebrating with them. This is really good news. Alfred Molina has confirmed in an interview with Variety that he is indeed reprising his role as Doc Ock and then Tom Holland Spider-Man. So yes, take my money.
And it sounds like they're going to de-age him, so he's going to look like he did back
Oh
then.
yeah.
Yeah, I'm down for this.
I'm reliving my childhood. Here we go.
I think this means that a lot of the other rumors are true as well. Maybe not the other Spidey showing up, but at least the Jamie Foxx one
Oh
and
yeah.
some of the other stuff. So
It's hard for me to believe that Jamie Foxx has kept quiet this long about it.
yeah, it's strange, but
Yeah. Maybe they paid him a buttload of money or something, but all right. Well, anyways, let's get to this awesome interview we have with David Hazan, and we'll see everybody on the other side.
welcome back, everybody. This week we have yet another very special guest and our first Australian guest for the show. Everybody, welcome to the show, David. It was Hazan, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, in
Thanks for
my
having
head
me,
it
guys.
started mixing up, and then I.
Yeah, you got it right. No. Hey, man, welcome to the show. Thanks for waking up early for us. We appreciate that. So,
Yeah,
we
we
I
got the Barry Allen screwing with the timeline thing going on here. Because
yeah,
you're like
there's
day ahead of us, and
yeah,
I
you're on a Monday and we're on a Sunday still, so there's some weird stuff happening
yeah.
right now.
Not much could get me up this early in the morning except comics, apparently.
All right. I mean, yeah, that's it for me too. Not much. I mean, I'm a coffee person. I usually can't function without caffeine. I can't even talk to anyone until I get that. So we really appreciate it. But I really do want to talk Nottingham because I read a couple issues, the preview issues that we got today, and I absolutely loved it. But let's do a quick origin story on you. I know you've had some success with Mad Cave. You got some cool things coming along with that, but give us your little origin story here. What got you into comics and how did you
Yeah.
get with Mad Cave?
Yep. So I've only been really reading comics to any serious extent for about 3 years.
Oh wow, okay.
It was one of those things where, I was never encouraged to read comics because they were for kids, and it was only like by virtue of some colleagues of mine who got sick of me talking about superhero adaptations in movies and TV that they would just like shove things in my hands to shut me up. That kind of spiraled out of control into me writing comics, really. And so in 2019, I entered Mad Cave's talent search on a whim. I had no serious expectations, and I almost missed the deadline because I was sitting on the script like an idiot. I won, and it's kind of just all snowballed into this.
And now, did you win with the Nottingham script? Was that something you had pitched, or?
No. So,
So
Mad Cave's talent search usually works, and this is the past 3 years of talent searches. So, I don't know how this is going to work. Don't quote me on it. But how it usually works is they'll ask you for a like 5 to 10 page script set in one of their existing properties because they want to see how well you write basically for hire. And so I don't know how familiar you guys are with Mad Cave's sort of back catalog of stuff. But I wrote a Battle Cats story. So Battle Cats, for those who don't know, is like a medieval fantasy version of Thundercats. And I wrote a Battle Cats story where I killed the entire cast of the Battle Cats, and apparently that got everybody's attention.
We know Battle Cats for sure. That's awesome. So you figured, oh, I have this crazy idea to kill the whole cast, and that'll get me noticed.
Yeah. And clearly it worked.
Yeah, that is awesome. And so the relationship with them has been, you know, working well for the past couple of years between you guys, you and Matt.
Absolutely. They really are a pleasure to work with. And I think, honestly, working for hire is the best way things can turn out for somebody who is just starting. Because there's a lot more hand-holding, and there's a lot of things that when you're working creator-owned, you have to do for yourself that you don't hear. And that just really helps somebody who's new in a vast number of ways. And I'm very thankful to Mad Cave. I am. And that relationship continues to be great.
And the difference between work for hire and creator-owned, do you share ownership of Nottingham or anything you create?
No, not for Mad Cave. Mad Cave's always been a closed house, and they gave me a genre, and I was like, all right, well, Nottingham, like, this is an idea that uses existing characters anyway. So I was like, you know what, let's do it. And I pitched them something that was sort of closer to what I thought they had in mind, and they ended up going with this, and it's been a great experience.
And you said, like, the differences between, you know, there's a lot of hand-holding, and they help you out with things. What are some of the things that you feel like as starting out they've kind of guided you or helped you out with, just like editing in general, or?
Editing, scheduling, like finding artists, colorists, letterers.
Yeah.
It's just like all of those things that can trip you up as a new creator, you just don't have to worry about because that's someone else's responsibility. It's in someone else's hands. And especially when it comes to cracking the whip with artists, not to say that, you know, any of my collaborators needed that whip cracking, but like when you're working creator owned, like you ultimately have control of all these things and therefore the burden of all these things. and just not having to worry about that and just focusing on, on actually doing the doing is just a really, it's a gift, basically.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I don't think we've ever had some insight like that. And so, I mean, have you had experience before when you pitched that idea, like writing scripts and stuff like that? Was that something you were familiar with, or you just kind of had a general outline? And
oh no, I probably 2019. So I probably spent about a year just like writing comic scripts, most of which never saw an artist.
Okay.
Before I launched into Nottingham. And that was just me trying to figure out my voice and also like conventions of the medium and stuff. So yeah, it's all practice. You can't just like launch into this thing without ever having written a script. Like, A, because Mad Cave forces you to write a script in order to
yeah, right.
to enter the race, but also just like it's very difficult to just trade on the power of the idea alone. Ideas are a dime a dozen, but like it's all about execution. So
right, okay.
Are you saying that there's a little bit of work put into becoming a decent writer?
No way.
I'm saying that it could be seen that way. Sometimes half of Twitter is like doesn't really see it that way. I'll say on that.
Yeah.
It's the old joke of the overnight success. Like, there's no overnight success. There's 13 years overnight success, or there's, you know, 4 years overnight success, but there's not really an overnight success. There's plenty of years of work put into it.
Before comics, I'd always been writing. I just never really found a place that I felt comfortable, like, taking that next step until I found comics. I was like, okay, this is me to a T. And it also helps when you have a day job. Writing comics is like something that you can do much more easily in a piecemeal fashion than you can writing in other mediums.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And As you said, like as someone who's only been, you know, reading comics for the last few years or so, can you give us some insight into like what is the comic industry like in Australia? Is it I don't know how much experience you have seeing it in the US, but I know myself going to other countries, I've seen it, you know, differently just in like places like Canada and stuff. What type of stuff is really put out there?
I mean, I can't comment a whole lot, mostly because it's not like I've experienced a whole lot of it, given the current global circumstances.
Oh, yes.
But things are like we have conventions this year here, which is going to be great, hopefully, and hopefully, no negative consequences arise as a result.
Right.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to delving into that. I've like just kind of been in touch with some stores about doing stuff. So we'll see how that goes rather than like me having any fully formed ideas about how the comics industry functions here. I will say like there, I have had talks and done some work with one Australian publisher called Gestalt, and it's been fantastic. I'm in a sci-fi anthology that they're doing, that they're putting out hopefully latest this year, early next year. And I assume that'll have some most of the like top Australian talent in there. So we'll see.
Cool. Awesome.
So that kind of answers my next question, but when you're getting into comics in Australia, do you have specific Australian properties that maybe we don't know about? Or are you mostly getting into the typical DC Marvel Image, so on and so forth?
There's not a whole lot of uniquely Australian like at least not commercialized stuff that's been getting put out there. Like, there's stuff on Kickstarter. There's a couple of smaller publishing outfits. Like, Gestalt publishes some stuff. So they used to publish, like, Tom Taylor's The Deep. That used to be something they published until that moved over to, I think, Boom?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there is some stuff, but not a whole lot that's, like, this is uniquely, like, Australian and nobody else knows about it. It's more like on an individual creator basis and okay. how they market it, etc.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, so let's talk Nottingham. I mean, that's the book you're here for today. We've read a couple issues. Give us the, because you said it's a, you know, we're using characters that we've seen before that are in old tales. It's a little bit of a twist on the Robin Hood story, I'd say. So give us that whole plot synopsis. So what's going on with that story?
All right. So Nottingham is basically a medieval noir. And we actually follow, rather than Robin Hood, we follow the Sheriff of Nottingham, who's like a cop, a detective in medieval Nottinghamshire. And he's hunting a serial killer who's been murdering the area's tax collectors. But the further he delves into this mystery, the more he realizes that he's going to be trapped between a lot of the political forces that are at play at the time, including Hood and the Merry Men, who are sort of our Robin Hood and Merry Men analogues. But they're definitely not as jovial as you've seen them in the past.
Yeah, and that's for sure after reading a couple issues. There's more of a darker, definitely a darker twist on the characters, right?
Yeah, and like, people have been using the word grimdark. I don't particularly like that term. I just think I've just given a different take on the characters, and like, it's not that it's like I purposely went for like this is gritty and real. It's just like it's just a product of my own cynicism, you know. And that's the only way I can describe it, really. Like, it's not dark for dark's sake. It's dark because, you know, this is like medieval England, and that's what I think it would have been like.
Right.
People would just murder because they can get away with it. And that's all a function of my own cynicism.
Yeah, and maybe it's just the mask that you use for the Merry Men, but it gives off a very V for Vendetta vibe to it as well.
Yeah, and I think nobody could ever accuse Alan Moore of being, you know, grimdark. He's just Alan Moore, you know, like he's not trading in. In anything other than, you know, his own the product of his own creativity. There's no like adherence to a certain kind of tone apart from the tone that he wants for the work. So the mask kind of that was an intentional reference, that particular one. I basically gave the artist the Guy Fawkes mask, kind of a mask that would have been used at the time, and said, make sure it's smiling because they're the Merry Men, but go nuts. And this is what he came up with. And Shane's pretty awesome. Like, I was blown away.
Yeah. That mask definitely leaves an image in your head, and it's like, it's a smile, but it's a creep. It's a maniacal smile, you know. It's very creepy. And I think I like, you know, the sheriff character, and not to like, you know, poke too much at other properties, but he reminds me of like the Hound style character, where he's a brutish, like, he, you know, he sees things on the surface of like, oh, this has to be the way it is, you know. And is that's kind of what you're going for? Of, and it almost I don't want to say it's like comical at times, but I just find myself like almost like smirking at some of the, like, the decisions and stuff he's making, even though he's like a very serious character, right?
Yeah, I think that's the like that's the power of dramatic irony in
Yeah.
that like I purposely put the reader in a position of more knowledge than the characters, which it makes it almost comical when you see
Right.
a character making the wrong decision, even
Yeah.
though there's a whole lot more wrong decisions that can
Yeah, right.
happen along the
Yeah.
way. Yeah.
And I think it's, I don't know, just because how serious he is when with making his decisions too, that it's I don't know, it just felt right. And I think the where you go from like issue one to two, not to spoil too much, but you say it is more of a noir, and you definitely feel that in the second issue where they're like interrogating suspects, right? You almost take us to like a police interrogation scene, right? Where like they have suspects and they have to interrogate them.
Yeah.
So that's a
I
little
think
more
we,
change in the pace, right?
yeah, I think we kind of, at least in this first, five issues, we kind of, bounce between, like the crime noir side of things and the detective noir side of things. And yeah, we just keep, ping-ponging between the two, and hopefully that produces a satisfying result. Because I didn't want to go too far in either direction, because if you go too far in one direction, you kind of lose the like tension in all the like other characters that are fun and interesting too.
Right.
And if you go too far in the other way, you kind of lose a certain dramatic tension and attachment to the sheriff. So it was a lot about finding a balance between like those two subgenres. And hopefully that continues.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And I see it almost like, but when you talk about the characters, it's really hard to pick one to root for, really. I mean, obviously, one set of characters is murdering people, but when you find out the layers of like, okay, maybe some of the, higher ups are involved, some of the mid-level people that have families are involved, or, trying to just keep themselves out of it by helping out, it's really hard to pick a side between, because like, the classic Robin
Yeah.
Hood story, you're like, oh, I'm always rooting for Robin Hood, like it's not so mixed or blurred lines, I guess, right?
Yeah. And people are complaining, honestly, that they can't find a character to root for. I'm like, that's the point, guys. Like, I'm not gonna tell you how to feel. That's not my job as a writer to tell you how to feel. My
Right.
job is to like reflect the world, and your job is to find a way to feel from that, like that's that. Yeah, I've never understood that criticism. Like, I guess like with a book series, like say Game of Thrones, for instance, where you like there's still people to root for, and I'm like, that's not necessarily like where I wanted to go with that. Like I didn't want to have, a Jon Snow or an Arya Stark where like this is clearly a person to like hitch your wagon to. I'm like,
Yeah,
no.
right.
No.
Okay. And yeah, I mean,
Make
two
up your
issues
own
in,
minds.
right. And two issues in, I think you can get a sense of that. So, is the first issue out now, or is that coming up?
So yeah, the first two issues are out. So and I really should have had this info up because that would have been extremely helpful. If give me one moment, I will figure it out.
Yeah, because I didn't want to spoil too much before they had come out.
Well, if I remember correctly, you sold out at Diamond for issue one, correct?
So issue one's first printing came out on the 11th of March or 10th of March, and that completely sold out. The second printing, which is also sold out at Diamond of issue one, comes out next week, Wednesday, so the 28th. Issue two came out on the 7th of April, so that's a couple weeks ago. That first printing has sold out, and the second printing comes out on the 12th of May. And I'm not sure how that's doing. So get your orders in if anyone who's listening, if you can, get an order in. Issue 3 first printing also comes out on the 12th of May, and then the third printing of issue 1 comes out on the 19th of May.
Okay. Wow. So I
So
mean,
if you're on the third printing of issue one, let me say, whoever's criticizing, ignore them because
Oh
money talks and you've won.
no. I'm not complaining about the critiques. I'm just genuinely curious where some people are coming from. It's like when I said noir, what did you expect?
It's I mean, man, congrats on that, and it's definitely, well deserved reading that first issue. That's so I mean, it's so awesome to see like indie comics doing well and people, investing in it too. That's got to be huge. So,
Yeah,
congrats on that.
it was equally surprising and terrifying to find
You're like, oh shit, people are reading this.
Yeah,
That's
yeah,
awesome.
like we completely destroyed a bunch of Mad Cave's records as well in terms of sales. So we're all very, very happy and excited. So.
Is
So
there like
I think it's safe to say that we're going to see some more books from you in the future. I know you can't talk about them, but there will be more books with David's name on them.
Vaguely working on some more stuff at Mad Cave and waiting to hear back about some other stuff, so we'll see.
So I mean, you're definitely going to be one of those dudes at the conventions with a line of people to sign their first, second, and third printings of issue number one, right? They're gonna have them all ready for you to
Hopefully, hopefully.
sign. Yeah, that'd be so cool. So where could we direct our viewers, listeners, if they want to follow the stuff that you're doing, how to keep them updated?
The best place to find me is Twitter, at David T Hazan. That's the letter T and Hazan for anybody who does not have the patience to read. No, I'm like I'm trying to make it as easy as possible for people. And my website at www.davidhazan.com. There's a little like free 4-page comic up there as well. Hoping to put up some more stuff sort of towards the end of the year, and just trying to get over the hump of like having moved into state and several like big day job and also comics deadlines so that I can make more free stuff. Apparently, that's
Awesome.
I know all about that. So yeah, everybody, you can find links to everything that David just said, including his Comixology page, in the show notes down below. So make sure to check the book out. As Mike and I both said, it's awesome with those first two issues. And I'll tell you, David, we get free, like we get review copies pretty often, and it's rare that I go back and buy them because I like them so
Thank you.
much. So that's the best compliment I can give you for this book. It was really great.
That's a resounding endorsement. Thank you.
Thanks, David. We wish you the best of luck, and we'd love to have you back
Thank you very
when we get some more
much.
issues rolling. So.
Will do.
Hey, we're back.
Yeah, so check it out. Nottingham 1 and 2, issue 3 coming in May. Can't say enough good things about it.
Yeah. Last thing I would expect to be saying is that I'm really into a Robin Hood book, so
Yeah,
that
same
should say a
here.
lot there.
Same here, dude. It's really cool, so check it out. Comic news. Marvel has announced that they're bringing back the comic series Amazing Fantasy, which is wild. Writer slash artist Carrie Andrews or Carr Andrews? Carr Andrews, will be the creator tasked with bringing back the series that introduced Spider-Man back in 1962. This new version will not be a series of one-shot sci-fi stories like the original, but instead will feature three time-displaced Marvel heroes during specific points of their history. And the first three heroes to be spotlighted are Spider-Man, surprise, Black Widow, and Captain America. Carr said that the series is going, it'll highlight different heroes. I mean, I guess that's kind of interesting, right? And I would hope they're going to do some more bizarre heroes, but I guess you got to start off strong with heroes that everybody loves for issue one, right?
Yeah, and I almost think like you got to do like Spider-Man as a constant.
Yeah, I would think so too.
Because Amazing, I mean, Fantasy and Spider-Man are so connected.
Right, it is Spider-Man, so.
That said, I'm down to check this out. It sounds like a cool idea.
Yeah, I might check it out as well, because it's not anything within continuity that I have to know about, you know?
Yeah.
Always down for that. Skybound is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. Robert Kirkman has announced a weekly miniseries to celebrate the past and future of Skybound Publishing. This is kind of crazy. The series is titled Skybound X, and will feature stories from Robert Kirkman, Chip Zdarsky, Donnie Cates, and many more. But do you really need any more than that? I mean, come on. The two stories that are making headlines are both by, you guessed it, Robert Kirkman. The first story is an alternate timeline Walking Dead story that will feature Rick Grimes and introduce Clementine to the comics for the first time, with art by Ryan Ottley. Holy shit. This just keeps better and better. And Clementine is from the Telltale series.
Video games, yeah.
Right? This is getting wild. The second will be a final issue of the series and is a secret project from Kirkman and Jason Howard, the artist of Super Dinosaur. Holy shit.
Yeah, dude, the Chip story is taking place in Stillwater. The Donnie story is in Rednecks.
Ugh.
They have a Giga story in there. There's so many cool things, and it's like an oversized big thing.
Yeah.
The first issue's cover art, which will probably be the thumbnail for this, is Rick holding a lightsaber with a fucking invincible mask on. So it's just, they're diving all in. I love the idea. And to keep people buying each issue, this Rick Grimes story, which I think was Rick Grimes 3000 was the title of it.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
That's going to be in each issue. So you're going to get a different chapter of it in each issue. So I love this. This is so cool.
This is fun. This is fun as hell. Like, this is how you do an anniversary, right?
And I love that Kirkman has really pushed to do like fun things in comics. Like when he did Die 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 and he just dropped it.
Right.
Or when I know people were mad about this, but I loved it when they just finished Walking Dead and said it's done.
Yeah.
Like, did no warning whatsoever. Stuff like that. I love. He's trying to bring some surprise and some fun to all this. And I really want to know what that secret project with him and Jason Howard is.
Yeah, I need that cover with the lightsaber. And Rick. It's amazing.
Yeah. That needs to be a poster as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then, just looking at Skybound X number 2 has a story from Birthright on the cover.
Yeah.
And I can't even... Daniel Warren Johnson. Oh, my God. Daniel Warren Johnson, too, is involved in this. Like, and then you have covers by Cliff Rathburn from Walking Dead. Like, oh, man.
Yeah, you read any Skybound stuff, this sounds like something you're going to want to check out.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And what have we been reading this week? Let's talk about that. I'm sure we both read a couple overlaps.
Well, so I'll start with beginning of the show. I said I was a busy week.
Yep.
That show was in the comics I read.
Oh, okay.
So we probably didn't overlap on anything, is what I'll say.
Well, let's just... I got one from last week that I caught up on. This is patron number one. This is the Steve Orlando and the Piazzalunga art. This is a Ahoy Comics book that I meant to read last week. I really liked this story. It was a Superman-style hero... that's controlled by several different... So it's the story starts off with the Superman has this like final battle with his arch villain. And he kills the villain and he supposedly dies, but like comes back miraculously. Well, it's because they've replaced him with like an android that's just as strong but he has to be controlled, almost like something like Pacific Rim, where you need to like tap in like with your brain or something like that.
Is this Project Patron?
Oh yeah, sorry, Project Patron. Yeah,
no, it's Aftershocks, not Ahoy.
Aftershock.
Just for the record.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I got my indie comics mixed up. Yeah. But it's interesting because like each of the people that are part of the group all have different skills. Like one's best hand to hand combat. One is best at like knowledge of the field, like scientists. So each one will take over. And there's like a commander in chief kind of that does most of the missions. Well, at the end of the issue, he ends up dying in the interface as they're hiring someone new to like take over. So that's kind of where they're left off. And it's really cool. I think it's a really cool concept. Batman the Detective, number one. This is the Tom Taylor, Andy Kubert book. This is the Batman story I've been waiting for about, 5 years. DC, where have you been with this shit? This is how you do a Batman story. I don't even need to say anything about it. Just, like, read it. It is if the Dark Knight Batman, if the Dark Knight Batman had the realization like, yeah, I'm old and grumpy and everyone around me has died, but why do I need to stay in Gotham because I've literally just ruined everyone's lives here? I'm going to go somewhere else. And he ends up going to England to investigate a plane crash from Gotham to England, where we find Knight and Squire. So we haven't seen them since like Batman Incorporated with Grant Morrison, I believe. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong.
Wow, I haven't heard those in a while.
Yeah. So right off the bat, also we get things like Batman gets greeted by the gentleman Ghost, and he was putting on these ghost gauntlets, and he's like, yeah, these are pretty much, and he's, I mean, the attitude of him is Dark Knight Returns Batman. He just does not give a shit. So he's like, yeah, these are from John Constantine. He doesn't like to use his fists, but I've never had a problem with it. And he just beats the shit out of Gentleman Ghost because he has like these super like supernatural gloves. The villains are these like white Batman suits that are like mercenaries. And he comes to the realization by the end of the issue that the whole plane that blew up or was crashed and everyone died, it was all people that he had saved throughout the years. So someone is going and killing all the people that Batman has saved their lives. Yeah, it's a crazy, and he's a detective. Like, he's got these gadgets. He's a detective. He's old. He's a badass. This is the Batman book. This is it. Like, it doesn't get much better than this. I don't know what else to say. Tom Taylor blew it out of the water with this book.
Yeah, this is what I will be reading tonight because I was really excited for it. But
yeah, you can text me after you read it because I couldn't get over how good it was. Like, it was so refreshing to have a Batman story. And then, like, yeah, what if Batman just didn't, like, it's not that he doesn't care about Gotham anymore. He cares so much that he realized he hadn't done shit in, like, so many years, and there's nothing tying him to Gotham. You know, Robin's dead. Alfred's dead. You know, the commissioner's changed. So, like, and now there's this plane crash in England that is related to Gotham. Why can't he leave and go investigate it? And he does. So, it's only six issues. Please give me more of this shit because I need more of that. Less of everything else that's going on with Batman. Yeah. Okay. Now that I'm done gushing about that. Nottingham number one and two. This, we talked about this in the interview. This is a noir book. And the great thing about it is it's a Robin Hood tale, but you don't know who to root for because, like I said in the interview, you always know who to root for, and the Robin Hood steals from the rich, gives to the poor. Well, now they're not stealing from the rich, they're killing tax collectors. So a little bit of a different twist there. And the characters are great. And I describe the main character, the Sheriff of Nottingham, as a hound from Game of Thrones, who was one of my favorite characters in Game of Thrones. And there's similarities in the appearance too. It's, the art is fantastic. It's gritty. It's it's not something I thought I would have enjoyed hearing the description, but I really do enjoy it. And I mean, come on, yeah. It sold out 2 printings, so.
And I love, because we have such a fantasy version of what like old England was and what medieval times were. And I love that this is just like dirty, gross.
Yep.
Everybody's a person. So like you say, you don't know who to root for. That's because people are imperfect.
Right.
And there's so many great things to do here. And some of the flashbacks that the sheriff has.
Oh, yeah.
Going back to the Crusades, like that hit me really in the right place.
Yeah.
Book's awesome. Go buy it.
Superman 30. This is the Philip Kennedy Johnson and Godlewski on art. Did you read this? I'll just say it's a good Superman story. I don't know where in the continuity it happens from the first issue. But, you know, we get like Superman being engulfed by this like symbiote in the beginning of the issue. And then we find out like, and then it's like, oh, here we go. Flashback to the start of the story. He goes to help an alien race that he has ties with, that had issues with the symbiote, find out this like symbiote style creature is still alive. Wraps that story up. The second story, you know, I was a little upset these issues cost $4.99 for these issues because they include a second story in the back. This is the one time that it was worth the extra money because it's an ambush book story. And the ambush book story is, it's interesting. There's like, they're trying to find out about these villains. An ambush book is just wild and wacky. And I can't really say any more than that. I mean, it was just a great story. The art was kind of crazy. But you don't see a lot of ambush bug. I mean, I would just give him his own series because it was a lot of fun. So I don't really understand what it's doing in the Superman book yet, but I think we'll find out. But yeah, I had Rorschach this week. I didn't read Rorschach this week. I know Chris dropped off that book like a while ago, right?
Well, I still read it.
Are you still reading it?
I didn't read it this week yet. It's not on the top of my list
anymore. Yeah, I have it. I haven't read it yet. And I might just wait till the series wraps up just because, like, I've kind of realized that I only really enjoy The Watchmen if Alan Moore himself is going to write that. Is my realization over the years. So, and I really want something to happen out of this book. And every issue I've kind of just, it just hasn't done it yet. So I've held it off for now. I read a lot of other stuff instead. So, you know.
I think Tom King's getting too cute for his own good.
Yeah. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. I had, real quick, Thor number 14, which is the end of the Prey storyline.
Yep.
It's really good. It's unfortunate that that's Nick Klein's last issue on Thor, and they're bringing a new artist. I really didn't like that. But the basics here is, like, Thor kind of takes up and says, you know, Odin tries to jump in and say, like, I'm going to take care of this. And Thor says, no, you're not king anymore. I'm king. Fuck off, old man. And he beats the crap out of the villain here. So it was good, but it was just a wrap-up. Big bang, fight him. That ended with a very interesting twist to it that I don't really want to give away.
Okay.
And then, so, What If Comics are back, everybody, with Spider-Man Spider Shadow, number one. This was Chip Zdarsky doing basically What If Spider-Man Became Venom. I was listening to an interview with Chip recently where he's talking about it, and what they want to do with these is, I love What If, but what If was one-shot stories that were a lot of exposition. Like, you know, Spider-Man becomes Venom, and then this happens, and that happens, and this happens, and that happens, and then this is where it ends up. And what they want to do with these new What Ifs is tell stories and do like 4-issue series that really tell an actual story and get in depth.
Yep.
So this first issue is him, like, he just got back from Secret Wars, and he's got the symbiote suit. He's not quite sure what it is. And it's that moment where he has to go to Reed and they figure out what the suit is and how it's doing things. He finds out it's alive and he has a run-in with Hobgoblin that doesn't go well. I like the issue. I like how it took those events that I'm familiar with from Spider-Man and then diverged at a certain point to create its own story arc here. And I think what he did here was a little safe. It was a little Force Awakens, if you will.
Oh, okay. Yep.
But I see why he's doing it, and it's, you know, they're trying to usher What If back and try to do something different with it. So I'm down for the ride.
Okay, cool.
To go along with Falcon and Winter Soldier, I read Black Hammer Visions number 3. Now you ask, how does that connect? The whole story here, this is once again Chip Zdarsky, everybody. The whole story here is that Abraham Slam has been retired. He's no longer Abe Slam. He's just a regular dude doing his thing. Mm-hmm. And the government wants another Abraham Slam. So they introduce this guy called the Slam. Oh, and Abe goes back out and is like, I'm not, this dude's, he's carrying a gun. He's just beating people up for no reason.
Yeah,
this ain't my legacy. I'm moving on. And it's all about Abe kind of coming back out of retirement, and he tries to fight this guy. And who are, the woman he's with, his wife, girlfriend, whatever she is very pissed at him because she's told him, like, that's not you. That's not your legacy. You don't have to worry about that. You're here now, and you promised me you weren't going back to that. So there's a relationship thing there. This was hands down the best Black Hammer Visions issue. This is what I wanted out of the series.
Nice, awesome.
It's really great. And then I read Department of Truth, Volume 1. I talked about Issue 1, and I didn't really pick up the series. I decided to trade weight on it. It's really good. So the first issue, we talked about it. It's about Flat Earthers and, you know, what happened there and how he gets in the Department of Truth. And then they kind of get into some really, like, they show you what the Department of Truth is. And there's a guy that's been there since the 60s, and he wears a tinfoil hat. And there's somebody that's always watching the news to see what new conspiracy is going to pop up. And there's somebody who's the new, like, tech nerd that's there. And it's this really crazy, creepy world that they've created. Okay. And he dives really deep into the whole... what did they call it in the 70s? It was the Satan. Shit, there's a word for it. But it's when everybody was afraid of, like, Satan. And we find out that our lead character was kind of came in contact with one of these devils. And it was a part of what the Department of Truth is all about, where people started to believe that, like, Satan was taking over their children and, like, influencing them. And our lead character had that problem. So now he wants to go and really investigate that. And okay. I love the series. I thought it was really well written, really well done. The art is very stylized, so anyone out there that's not a fan of, like, stylized art, and what I mean by that is this is art you would never see in a Superman book or a Cap book or any mainstream book. It's its own style, its own thing. And I dug that as well. I thought it fit the atmosphere of the world that was created here. And hats off to Tinian. I mean, I never thought I'd be this thrilled about a Tinian book, but here we are. and then I want to end with my last book, because I promised it to our former guest of the show and, dare I say, friend.
Oh.
Derek Robertson. I got my Space Beaver issue number 1.
Nice.
Derek was right. You can see the art there. You can see the Derek that he becomes.
Yep.
It's everything's really interesting. Some of the designs are simplistic in nature. The story is rough. And let's just say I'm glad that Derek didn't make this and then give up, because this... I challenge anybody that's a fan of his, that's read Transmet, that's read Boys, and some of the other stuff he's done, to read this and connect the dot, because it's just not, it doesn't feel like the same person.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting as a historical thing to look back and be like, this is where he got to start.
Interesting.
I will not be buying more.
Yeah, I kind of stayed away from that, for sure.
With all respect, Derek, But then again, from the conversations I had with him, I don't think he's going to take offense to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's all I had this week. Mike, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show and these awesome merchandise purchases? Merchandising.
They can find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter and the show at Fortress Comics _ on Twitter. Also at FortressComicNews.com. Everything we do is right there on that handy-dandy website, including the link to buy some fantastic merch. We'll also have all those links in the show notes below, as well as everything for our guests this week. The Patreon, everything will be down there for you to check out. So, everybody, if you are listening to us, give us a 5-star review on iTunes or whatever podcatcher you're using. And to give us a thumbs up down below, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and comment down below if you're watching on YouTube. And if you want to go the extra mile, there's Patreon at patreon.com/fortresscomics. That is everything, I believe, for this week. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all here next week.